Hey, this is Gretchen with ComeToYourself.com, sitting down with artist Walter O'Neill to discuss spiritual accountability and how he serves his soul's purpose.
Morning.
Morning.
Good, how are you? We're both up at the literal butt crack of dawn.
Yep.
Thanks for doing this with me. Full disclosure, obviously we're related. You can tell by the resemblance.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to talk to you a bit about being an artist and how it informs your spirituality, your identity. And so first question, what is your earliest memory of being an artist?
Probably just, preschool, elementary school stuff, coloring with crayons and coloring books, just being encouraged to, continue to color and draw as a little kid.
Did you feel something when you would color and draw as a kid? Did it feel organic to you, or did it just feel like no different than playing with like matchbox cars or something?
It's hard to describe. It's maybe like, for me, it's like, it's a process that when you start, you feel like you kind of need to see it to the end. Like, almost like when you, on the playground, once you get to the top of a slide, once you start sliding down, you gotta go to the bottom, right? Like that's how the whole thing works. So that's what art feels like to me. Once you kind of start working on something, that you kind of just need to keep following it down until the ride is over. So that's something I did recognize as a kid. You know, if you're drawing a little car, you don't feel like you've done it until all the wheels are there and it feels like a car, you know. So that still translates to adulthood. Where the project doesn't feel complete until you don't feel like you can walk away from it until it's done.
And you literally mean walk away from it. Like I remember growing up, you would, even as a young kid, you would be up all night if you started something.
Yeah, it's kind of like an itch that you keep scratching and it doesn't feel satisfied until like the entire thing's over. And then you're like, whew, okay, I can be done with that. And walk away to something else. But even then, you know, there's still twinges of it where you walk by it and you're like, somebody could tweak this thing or still not happy with that.
So beyond this need for completion, did you have any other feelings when you created art as a kid? Was it a feeling of accomplishment or purposeful?
It totally feels like a sense of accomplishment. It feels like you did something. It almost feels like solving a Rubik's Cube or something. It's like you got to the final picture where everything's complete, and then you're like, okay, I can put this down and then pick up a different puzzle and try and solve that.
Is that the same feeling you have today?
To a certain extent, yeah.
What do you think has changed between then and now, if you can describe it?
Probably just the ability to turn it on and off and to be able to walk away from stuff. And that's something that comes if you're going to choose to be an artist as a profession, just because now you're not working for yourself, you're working for somebody else. So the job's over when the deadline hits or they say it's done. It doesn't matter what you think anymore. You're not the final arbiter.
So you've had to learn to walk away even if you're not completely satisfied.
Oh, sure. Having to walk away knowing that there's things that you don't like about something. And that's tough. That's just how it is. And that's how the world is going to see it and perceive it forever. And you just have to live with it.
In any way, does that feel a little less authentic?
Not really. It it more feels like a maybe like a race or a competition. You know, like if you're the if you're at the Olympics, even though you hold the world record maybe separately, either win or lose the Olympics, it's its own separate thing. So that'll always stick with you one way or the other, whether you won or lost it. Despite your other accomplishments in the same field, like, you always look back at that one thing and go, yeah, that's when I lost the Olympics. That's when I came in second. When I came in third. So it'll always stick there with you, but you know, the amount you care about it gets less and less the more projects you do.
Have you ever finished something for a job where it didn't feel complete to you and you came back to it on your own later?
Oh, absolutely. Sometimes you do that. If it's something that you're going to showcase in your portfolio, sometimes you might still tweak it before you put it up for the world, even though that's not the version you sent. Because if it's your portfolio, you get to put up whatever you want. No one has to give you the high five to say, yes, you can include this piece. So if you're going to put it in there, you can put it with extra tweaks, with some extra sauce.
But again, that was more for a business purpose. It was for your portfolio. It wasn't necessarily you coming back to it because you personally couldn't let it go.
Well, it's kind of both. So like the version you deliver to the client, that's the business transaction, right? Mm-hmm. But if there's something like, say the client decided they wanted something green and you wanted it red instead. All right, well, you can give it to them green for their version, but if you want to display it for yourself, why not make it red? You know, like once you make that client version, they have what they wanted. Mm-hmm. So if you want to then invest extra effort to turn it into something that you're more happy with, or you're happier with, then yeah, why wouldn't you? Especially if it's just a little bit of time.
What if it's a lot of time? Would you still do it?
Because that's time that's better spent moving forward in another direction.
Got it. But would you say your younger self, like let's say, you know, 10-year-old Walter, would be able to let it go as easily as 40-something-year-old Walter can?
Oh, absolutely not. that's something that you learn over time. And you learn, you know, the more of whatever the art form is, the more of it you do, like the more winters you see, whatever that saying is. So, you know, if you've only done 5 projects, every one of those projects is like 20% of your artistic career, you know, and you hold that 20%, like it means something. But if you've done 1,000 projects, what is one out of 1,000, you know, it's a drop in the bucket. So you're able to carry the wins and losses easier in your own mind. Because in most cases, there'll be more wins that you can hold on to. Like, there'll be more successes than failures, especially if you're doing this as your job.
Yeah, I find it interesting that you characterize your work as a win and a loss, or a success and a failure, versus just a piece, you know, just a piece of art, you know, that's out there. Does it feel like when you put it out there that it's something that is, you know, either a triumph or a failure? Like, is that the emotion that comes to you when you produce something?
Certainly. Because it, you know, it's a success or a failure depending on its usefulness to the client, if it's a client piece. So it's successful if they like it and they pay you for it. that is its own success. Mm-hmm. But then there's the success on top of that is this something that you then want to use to represent yourself going forward? Is this something that you want to put in your portfolio? Something that you want to have people recognize as your work? So not every piece that you work on like crosses that boundary where you're like, no, this piece is going to represent me now for the next 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years. So there's a success or failure in that regard where you're like, yes, I spent the time, however much time it took to make the client happy, but is then this piece useful to me as you know, branding, as something to represent me going forward? And then that's either a yes or a no.
So when you say your art represents you, how does it represent you? What do you mean by that?
Being a professional artist is like, it's a career almost where you're putting your resume, not on LinkedIn, but it's like you're spreading it out everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And your resume is all the stuff you worked on. It's all the images that you then want the world to associate with you and your name. So like that in and of itself is its own beast that you have to wrangle. Getting people to associate certain images with you and getting that stuff to stick so that when they see it, they go, oh yeah, that's you. Like that's its own ball of wax to try and figure out.
So let me ask a question though, and I'll just keep referring to it as 10-year-old Walter. Do you think 10-year-old Walter saw the artwork that he did as being, or cared about it representing his ability or representing something about his spirit, his self?
I think 10-year-old Walter just cared more so about it representing his ability to make stuff. So it was just more of a checkbox, like, does this thing look like a house, yes or no? Does somebody recognize this thing as the thing that I'm trying to make them recognize, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the stuff you start off with as a kid. Does this look like a dog? Does this look like a cat? Does this look like a cloud? Can people recognize the thing that I scribble on paper, people recognize that as a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that process just gets more and more complicated as you get older and you dive more into the art, just because instead of wanting somebody to recognize the thing that you're making, now you want somebody to react to it. You want them to have an emotion. You want them to get some kind of like physical or emotional response when they see your stuff. So it's along the same lines in that you want somebody to recognize what your scribbles are,
mm-hmm.
in a way other than scribbles on a page. But it's just the thing that you want someone to feel gets more complicated. And like that's how you're adding the skills to the skill set. Is can I make you sad?
When do you think it changed for you where you wanted to have your art evoke some kind of a reaction in somebody beyond just, oh, that's cool, or, you know, like you're talented? Like were you wanted them to have some kind of a emotional connection to what you were creating?
I'm not sure when exactly that happened, maybe high school. Mm-hmm. But it's just, you kind of cross the threshold where, drawing photos doesn't cut it anymore. Because like that's the goal that a lot of artists chase just getting started, is how realistic can I make something? Mm-hmm. And that just means how well can I copy this photo of the thing that already exists? That is its own skill set, just being able to replicate something that already exists. But after you do that several times, that stops being enough. Like, it just becomes more of an exercise. Like doing scales, maybe if you're a singer.
Mm-hmm.
It just becomes, you're not necessarily proving anything to yourself by doing it again. It's like, at some point you're like, yes, I can copy photos. Do I need to copy another photo to prove that I can copy photos? Like, it stops being a challenge that's interesting to you if you're trying to constantly get better. So then you're like, okay, well, what's next? If I can make you recognize anything as being realistic when I put the scribbles on the page, then what else can I make you recognize?
At this point, did you feel that your imagination, your creativity really started to become more important to express?
Yeah, at some point you just start realizing that you want to have something to say, or there's something that you want to convey to somebody rather than you know, this is a bowl of fruit on the table. And then once you identify that, like that's the goal, you want to make people feel something, then that just opens up all new avenues of, okay, how am I going to do that? What avenue do I want to pursue to make that happen?
So this is a question from somebody who clearly does not have a imagination that then I can translate into an artistic creation. So the creation process is super fascinating to me. I don't understand how you have a original creative vision or thought and then, you know, put that out, you know, whether it's in a painting or a sculpture. How does the inspiration start? How does the creative moment occur for you?
There will just be something unique that sticks out either about the subject matter or the visual puzzle that you're trying to solve. Because to me at this point, there's nothing exciting about doing something I've already done several times before. So that there's always something new. Okay, so what am I doing new in this piece that I haven't done before? And then that becomes the challenge, the thing that you're trying to solve. And that's no different than, algebra or any kind of math problems or chemistry or any kind of scientific or, right brain process, or was that left brain, whatever. Any one of those intellectual processes where, you know, there's a series of rules, and using those rules, you will solve the equation, the problem, the puzzle, the geometry, proof. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you have these tools at your disposal, and then that's the end result you want to get. So how do you get these tools to turn the back? And then that's the fun part, just because you kind of have to start chipping away at it. And that's the part where you're testing yourself and actually growing, because you haven't done this before. So you need to stretch yourself in order to be able to cover this new area.
Based on this conversation, it seems like for you, and like I said, correct me if I'm wrong in this characterization, but it seems like for you that art is almost the means to the end and not the end, in the sense of the goal and the end for you seems to be the challenge of solving a problem or creating something that hasn't been out there before. And that itself is a problem, you know, and that's the puzzle that you're trying to solve. But it's about that challenge. It's about setting a goal for yourself that is something that hasn't been achieved that you're aware of and going for it. And you use art as your way of using, doing that exercise. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, very much so. What can I compare this to? Maybe like working out. If you have the same 5-day routine and you did it for 2 years, you know, like chest on Monday, I do arms on Tuesday, I do legs on whatever it is. Mm-hmm. If you do that same routine for 2 years, at some point your body just goes, yeah, we know what this is. So you start getting any, you stop getting the same type of benefits from it that you did originally. Like originally that workout caused you to grow. Now that workout just causes you to maintain at best, right? So you constantly have to introduce new things that are different to that your body's not used to doing, in order to kind of like shock it into now being able to cover this new area that you're asking it to cover. So it's the same thing artistically, if that makes any sense, just that you're looking for a new problem to test yourself against in order to like excite all the things in you that make you inspired to solve that new riddle.
Well, that to me is really interesting, because I would venture to say that that's not the same feeling for every artist across the board. You know, I would probably say that I'm sure that there are artists that simply create for the joy of the expression of the creation, to have an original thought and just put it out on the page. You know, what you're describing is a separate extra element. That's the same kind of element that an Einstein or anybody else that wanted to, you know, take things a step further, you know, not content with what's been explained as this is what it is, and feel this drive to, you know, see what else is out there, including just in yourself, seeing what else is out there in yourself. Do you feel that when you don't serve that purpose, when you're not doing that artistically, that you're not necessarily feeling like your authentic self?
It makes me wonder why I'm doing the thing. Mm-hmm. You know, if there is no immediate, like, if I can look at the thing and instantly check all the boxes of this is how I would do all of that, to me, it makes it a lot less exciting, just because there is that difference between, you know, knowing what to do and executing what to do. But at some point, the execution isn't an issue. Like, you're not looking at yourself and going, am I going to be able to draw this thing? You're like, yeah, I know I can draw it. It's just, is me drawing that going to deliver the end result that I'm hoping for? And the closer that gets to certainty before you start, you're like if you look at that thing and go, okay, 95% I can knock that thing out of the park. Then you go, okay, well, why bother then? Because if you've gotten to that point, you've probably done so many things that are so similar to it. What is doing this thing going to do for you?
Mm-hmm.
Like if it's a hired assignment, you know, someone's paying you to make this thing. Okay, well then that's your goal. That is your goal, is to
get paid. Yeah.
But if it's not a paying gig and this is something that you're doing for you, mm-hmm. why are you doing it? Because if you're just doing laps around the track that you've always done, same laps, at some point you just, why am I doing? Because, like, okay, so even if you look at, what's that guy's name? Jim Davis, the guy who does Garfield, right?
Mm-hmm.
What Garfield looked like in book one versus what Garfield looks like book 20, like 10, 15, 20 years later, it's a completely different cat. Like, it's a completely different thing that he's drawing, but he's still saying it's the same character.
Mm-hmm.
So how is he transitioning from, you know, this big wedge loaf of bread looking cat to this more streamlined, lanky limbed cat, and he's mm-hmm. still saying it's the same thing. Well, it's just, that's his growth as an artist. Mm-hmm. He's constantly resolving the same problem.
Mm-hmm.
He's coming down to his desk and go, okay, what does Garfield look like to, you know, a guy who's been doing this for 1 year? What does that character look like to a guy who's now has the skill set of somebody doing this for 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
And he's not being married to the thing just because that's how he did it in the first place.
And so the growth process through art is what you feel is serving you. It's what's feeding you.
Yes. That is the only thing that is why I chose this as a career versus any other thing. Because, you know, formerly working as an accountant, time cards. And you're not, I don't know that you're going to see the same kind of growth year over year doing time card after time card. At some point, it's not going to be a challenge for you. It's just going to be going through the motions.
Do you feel like we're talking about growth, and obviously we're relating it more to, you know, maybe your a growth in your skill set or a growth in your talent. Do you feel that it also involves a growth in your spirit and your identity and your personality as well?
Yeah, I think it kind of has to. Because what we're talking about is kind of having something to say and something that you want other people to feel. Well, like that doesn't come easily. That's something you have to work on. It comes over time. Just your ability to kind of work in that space. As you master a subject, mastering a subject basically, in my opinion, means being able to perceive and manipulate more and more subtle things in that subject matter. The difference between being able to see something that's black versus white, right? It's the highest contrast you can see. Anybody can see that. But can you see something that's, you know, like if we've got 245 levels of gray, can you tell the difference between 133 and 134? It's like that kind of stuff, to be able to see that that's clearly different. And I can tweak those now because I can see that difference and I can perceive it. That's stuff that only comes with the mastery of a subject. And that's something that I think being able to key into more emotional stuff, like that comes with the mastery of the tools and the techniques and the art form. It's like once you have all that stuff down, I don't, like once you master an instrument, I don't want to play Twinkle Twinkle Little Star anymore.
Yeah.
I want to play more complicated stuff because I can't.
You talked about being an accountant. There was a part in a time in your life when you walked away from art. Certainly as a profession. Did you walk away from it personally during that time as well? Were you not creating anything during that time?
I was creating very little. I just wasn't flexing any part of any of those muscles really.
Why did you feel like you had to do that personally?
I think it was, if anything, it ended up being more a form of a reset. Because going through art school, especially as young as I did, because I went like 18 straight out of high school.
Yeah.
So high school is, with all the academic stuff, it's very binary. It's straight up a meritocracy, right? You score 95 on that test, you know, you get an A.
Yeah.
Score less than that, you get a lesser grade.
Yeah.
It's just what it is. With art stuff, since so much of it can be subjective, you're then having to filter so much of it through people's opinions that at some point you have to decide, okay, well, that's what this person believes, that's what that person believes, what do I believe? Like, what is my cultured aesthetic? I know what that guy likes, I know what that person likes. What do I like in the absence of their opinions? So it takes a minute to get to that point where you decide that your voice is as important to you as other people's voices.
More important to you than other people's voices.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
But you have to get to the point where you decide it's as important first before it's more important. Just because the way that those structures are set up, you know, you have a teacher, so that teacher's opinion is more important than yours because that person is experienced, they've got this position of authority, and they've got more miles logged on the odometer. So the difference of opinion, you just skew. Okay, well, clearly, they have to know better than me because they've got all the stuff on their side. But as you get older and you log your own miles, you start to understand, like, okay, well, now I don't just have to acquiesce just because that's what you like or that's what you think is correct. And it takes a lot of courage to understand that that's what you're doing. You're standing on your own and you're saying, okay, I think my opinion carries just as much weight as yours to me. That's a hard one.
Valuing yourself in general is a hard one.
Especially over people that you've had to place in a position over you. But then take those people off that pedestal. Or to put yourself on one right next to it. However, you know, you're rationalizing it to yourself, but that has to happen.
Do you think if you didn't go to art school, because I mean, obviously when you went to college, that was the first time that you had been really in a completely immersive art environment.
Yeah.
If you think you didn't do that, if you think maybe you just kept creating on your own, maybe you took a class here or there if you felt you needed it, you know, to learn a skill set, but not necessarily throwing yourself into such a subjective environment at that age. Do you think you would have found value in your own voice sooner or later than you did?
I probably would have found that sooner. I think that's one of the things that art environments kind of beat out of you is your kind of your belief in yourself and what you were doing is correct. A lot of that stuff gets supplanted with, oh no, that guy's better than you, so you should be doing what you're doing, or that person's got this technique down, so you need to pick that up, so you need to start doing what they're doing. Very rarely you get told, no, do more of what you're already doing. But the trade-off there, I think, is what that school environment does is it's a bit of a pressure cooker where it's kind of like a hive mind thing where you're surrounded by a ton of people who all basically have the same goals. So you're all going to push each other to get better faster than you would working by yourself in a vacuum. So I spent, you know, 4 years in college, and that 4 years, I think, upped my technical ability by leaps and bounds, but I think probably stunted my ability to really express myself personally. Just because, you know, it introduced a lot of doubt where there had not been doubt previously.
Do you always correlate your soul's purpose to a career or a job?
No. To me, those are two completely different things. Because your job is it's your money making deal, right? Like that's why it exists. You do that to pay your bills so that you can live. I think most people, if they didn't have to do their current job, they probably wouldn't. It's whether, you know, I hate Mondays where all that stuff happens. But I don't think your job necessarily has to be your purpose in life. It just ends up being most people's purpose in life just because it takes up the majority of people's waking hours. They end up focusing on whatever their career is. But I don't think that has to be what you were put on this planet to do.
So then what happens with people who turn their soul's purpose, let's say their soul's purpose is to create, you know, art, right? To create something that evokes emotion in others or, you know, helps other people have something to hold on to help process their emotions through, right? Whether it's a piece of music or a visual piece of art. So if that is your soul's purpose and then you turn that into a job, you know, that becomes your career, how does that work if, like you said, for the majority of people, their job isn't, you know, what makes them whole or what serves them because of all the, pardon my friends, the bullshit that comes with working a job, you know, in our society? What happens when you identify your soul's purpose and you turn it into something that, you know, is a societal job to pay your bills? Does it taint it for you? Does it make you less inclined to pursue it?
I think in order to turn, like, if it's your life's purpose, I think in order to turn it into a career, you have to have a pretty good handle on, you have to understand the thing from top to bottom. In order to be able to separate your ego from the process. Because what's going to make you hate it is doing it for somebody else, is the conflict, the disagreement between what you want and what the client wants. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that's going to make you not like it, because why else would they just say, hey, make whatever you want, we'll pay you as much money as you like. And you'd be like, okay, great. It's just when those factors change, that's when issues arise. It's, this is something you don't want to do, or we're not paying you anything, or you know, the deadline's super tight. It's one of those factors that then steals some of the joy from the process, but you have to understand what part of the process is that you like. Like, as an artist, you spend a lot of the time in a room alone by yourself. So if that's the part of the process that you like, hey, guess what? That shows up every time. That's going to be there every job, is you concentrating by yourself, working in a room by yourself. So it's just understanding that, and not getting married to the stuff that's is out of your control. Mm-hmm. Like, just hold on to the stuff that you can change and all the stuff that you can't change. If you can get your ego past caring about that stuff, then you'll be great.
Did you ever experience any, you know, what other people may call, like, you know, the dark night of the soul? You know, did you ever experience any points in time in your artistic process where it hurt more than it created joy?
Only when I felt overwhelmed. Only when the what's being asked of you kind of gets outside of your skill set too much. Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking before about enjoying projects that are challenging, right?
Solving the puzzle.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So that only works if you have a puzzle that you know how to solve, right? Mm-hmm. So when someone then presents you with a puzzle that you don't know how to solve, and you do not have the tools to solve it, but are still on the hook for solving it, mm-hmm. that's where the issues come in. Mm-hmm. When something is just so completely out of your scope, and there's just so much to learn in order to cover all the bases, that's when it's panic-inducing. And that happens a lot, especially early on, because that's when you're going to be confronted with the most things that you haven't done yet, because you haven't done anything. So that stuff, I think, certainly happens to me in college, but happens to a lot of people, I think, in that college environment, where it's the first time you're being put on task and expected to you know, get it done no matter what.
Was there a moment during that time where you maybe thought, I can't do this, I can't do this whole thing? Like, it became beyond just, I can't solve this puzzle. It maybe created out where I can't solve a lot of puzzles, and therefore maybe I shouldn't consider doing this.
Oh, like, those moments show up all the time. Mm-hmm. It's a constant process of patting yourself on the back and then tearing yourself apart. Mm-hmm. Of like, I solved that, aren't I so smart? And then the next one comes up and you can't solve it, and you're like, I'm the worst person, I don't know how to do this, I'm a fraud, I'm an idiot, I don't know why people pay me to do this. And it's that back and forth, minute by minute, throughout the entire process of making anything.
How do you personally work through that? I mean, you've been doing this now for decades. What tools have you come up with personally to get over that hump?
It sucks every time. It doesn't get easier. And it doesn't, like, the only thing that makes it easier to have faith in yourself is just the fact that you've done it so many times. But every time it pops up, you're like, okay, no, this is the one that's going to break me. Every single time. This is the puzzle I'm not going to be able to solve. This is the thing I'm not going to be able to make look right. And then once you figure it out, you're like, ooh, done. And then maybe the next one goes quickly, and you're like, I'm a genius. And then the next one trips you up, and you're like, I'm terrible. I should be fired. Why would they let me do this? And it's like that every single time. And you just have to be okay with that and recognize that that's what's happening. Like, recognize that you're doubting yourself, and just keep your head down and keep doing it. Eventually, you'll get there. on a long enough timeline, I think every artist figures out, I'll get it eventually.
Mm-hmm.
It's just how long is that timeline you have to work with?
And sticking with it, not turning back, not quitting the whole process in general, but saying, okay, maybe I didn't figure this one out. So next time I'll work harder, or I'll develop the skill set in between to try to figure it out in the future.
Yeah, all those failures stick with me. So that either means that in the next one, you'll either steer more into it, where you're like, okay, I need to be more aggressive and I need to understand more about whatever was tripping me up, or you'll go the complete opposite. I ain't never doing that again. I'm just going to stay over in this corner. Are you trying any of that? You trying to hire me for any of this stuff? Nope. Mm-mm, nope.
So you've described a lot of instances, obviously, in your career and in your process where you have highs and lows insofar as, you know, self-congratulation and then, you know, self-flagellation almost. Have you had to, over the course of your, you know, lifetime, because you've been doing this since you were a kid, have you had to work on creating certain tools or processes to, you know, help keep you moving forward so that you don't ever get stuck or down a hole or concerns with your mental well-being and general health?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially since I, you know, work in a visual medium in the collectibles industry. There's, you know, there are forum boards and congregations of where people come together to speak about the stuff that you make.
Mm.
And you can read that stuff or not read that stuff, but the world is having a conversation about your work, and you can, it's there for you to tap into. Now that, just that being available, there being a conduit for you to hear firsthand what people have to say about your work. I think it's a blessing and a curse.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that you kind of need to fortify yourself in order mm-hmm. to tap into. Because anytime somebody reads something in print, part of you wants to think it's true. And it's not like anybody exists on forum boards for any reason other than entertainment. Mm-hmm. So those people are there to entertain themselves and each other, and sometimes it's at your expense. Mm-hmm. But you have to understand if there's any truth to the things that they're saying. If somebody's saying that your process is the piece that you made is terrible, you have to decide whether or not you think that they're right. And then sometimes the correct answer is yes, they are right. You did drop the ball on that. And you have to let that information not break you. Like, you have to be able to accept that information in a way that is helpful, even if it's not presented in a helpful way. And the only way that you can do that is by working on yourself as a person. Is by really getting your ego tamed in check, and understanding what it is that you're bringing to the process.
Would it be fair to say that sometimes maybe you use those forums almost as a form of accountability?
To a certain extent, I think so. Just because you in your mind have an opinion on how something went. You know, you participate in something, you have an idea of how it went and how you performed. So part of you wants to know if that lines up with the accepted perception of what the story the world is telling about what happened versus the story you're telling in your own head. And I think there's a certain level of, like, I won't call it accountability, but there's a certain level of earnestness and just being an adult, just to be able to process that stuff and not let it destroy you, or mm-hmm. not think that somehow you need to cater to those voices at the same time. you know, like you see a movie review, going old school, but if like Siskel and Ebert said that they didn't like something, is that next filmmaker going to be able to make his next film without having those words in his head? Mm-hmm. You know, if they said something was corny, is he going to be able to still write the same type of dialogue that he enjoys without having all this corny in the back of his head? It's a tough thing to do, but it's, in my opinion, it's necessary. I don't believe when people say, oh, I don't read any of that stuff. It's like, why not? Why not? To me, there's no good reason not to read it. You don't need to believe it, but you need to know exactly. It's out there.
Well, and beyond that, like if it was me, you know, obviously I'm not being criticized in a public forum on a regular basis, but if it was me, I would probably handle it the same way that you do, in the sense of I would read it, I would process it, and I would use it to actually ask myself those questions. You know, did I mess up, you know, by putting this over here? Or did I, you know, not stay true to a character or not stay true to something else because I chose to interpret it this way, you know? And in that way, I feel like it is a form of accountability, not necessarily to anybody else, but to my own process. Because if I then answer those questions and come back with, nah, you know what, I'm cool with what I did. Yep. And not based in ego, but based in, you know, I'm going back and I'm really understanding that what I put forward was my authentic self. It was my, you know, interpretation of whatever the statue is. And, you know, therefore I am good with this. It may not be well received. I can accept that, but yeah. You know, I'm staying true to who I am. And I stayed true to who I was when I created that, you know, and in that way I'm accountable to myself. I've held my soul accountable and I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
But like you said, that's a skill set. Yeah. That's not something you walk in the door with your first project and your first set of reviews and can do.
Yes. I think everybody needs stress. Like you need a certain amount of stress in order to grow in any given direction. Mm-hmm. So I think you need physical stress as far as like lifting weights, mm-hmm. gym work, like that's what makes your body grow. I think we all need a certain extent of emotional/
tension. Like that's why tension is there.
Yes. Like yeah. You need to be pushed in order to be able to grow in any particular. So I think it's good. I don't want to say it's good to have negativity in your life, but to a certain extent, you shouldn't be shielding yourself from that 100%.
Would you say that you walk towards the struggle or walk away from the struggle? What does your natural instinct do?
My natural instinct does the math for me really quick on what I think I'm going to get from that struggle. Mm. And then I decide whether or not I want to engage in it or not. Just like earlier we were talking about, you know, replicating photographs is, mm-hmm. You know, it's a skill set, but it's I won't say it's a shallow skill set. Mm-hmm. And once you kind of get your head around being able to do it, why you would do it again, I don't know. You know, because you've already proven that you can do it. So I don't know what you get out of it besides just here's another instance of me doing it.
Well, like I said, there are people who need that safety and security, you know, that constant, that repetition. You know, and those are the people who I would say definitely don't go towards the struggle, you know, yeah. And it sounds like you're definitely, whether you're calculating the risk, you know, ahead of time, which is smart, that's what anybody should do, you know, you don't necessarily let it deter you from pushing forward. You're going to push forward.
Yes. Yeah. Like part of me is looking at this like it's one big video game, you know, like, when you're playing video games, you invest all these times to leveling up your character and getting all these skills that you then get to carry with you. So it's like it's doing that in real life, mm-hmm. By working on how you perceive the world and what you carry with you and what you choose to dwell on and what you choose to let go. Mm-hmm. I look at struggles that way. What skill set am I going to pick up for going through that? Mm-hmm. And if that skill set I think is no value to me, then I'm probably going to try to avoid that struggle.
Yeah.
We only have so much time, you know?
Yeah. Why am I in this life?
Time over there and get nothing from it when I can invest that same time over here and get some dividends.
Have you done any work insofar as whether it's certain books you read or courses you've taken or any spiritual practices that you engage in on a regular basis to be able to keep pushing forward, you know what I mean? To be able to keep living the life that you're living the way you live it?
I'm constantly watching YouTube videos where people are talking about how to manage personal relationships, either business or friendships or intimate relationships. Because to me, that's where you can level up yourself as a person and be able to carry those lessons with you forever.
Connection. So you spend a lot of time working on connections.
Yeah, well, okay, so if I can level up myself such that I feel like my interactions with people are beneficial to us both, mm-hmm. I read and watch a lot about, like, management techniques and what it's like to be a good leader and how to communicate with people in ways that are fulfilling for both. I feel if you can level up yourself as a person like that, then that's not only a benefit to you, but it's a benefit to anybody that you're then in contact with.
Yeah.
So that's then a kind of, let's say, gift you're giving, but it's
service. Yeah.
It's work. It's a service. Mm-hmm. For the benefit of everybody. Mm-hmm. Just by having yourself so much in line, so much in check, and knowing so much about how you work as a person, you know, like how you tick, how your human machine functions, mm-hmm. and what your triggers are, and how to avoid certain things and how to steer into other things. It's like that just helps everybody. The more you're on the correct page of how you function, mm-hmm. the more good you do for everybody. So I see it almost as a public service that I think everybody should do. And we all know that one person who hasn't done any of that work, and it's a nightmare to be around.
Exactly. And that's the crux of it. That's the whole concept of spiritual accountability. You know, it's like you're putting in that time and that work to know yourself. And by knowing yourself and knowing, like you said, how you work and what your triggers are, what you need to grow personality-wise, identity-wise, interconnection, you know, skill-wise, and what you also feel that you have mastered to a point where you can offer it as a service to others, you know, to help them grow and evolve. It's like that doing that personal check-in, you know, is the core concept of spiritual accountability.
I totally agree with that. And I think it's work that you don't get out of doing. Everybody's got to do this work eventually. So it only benefits you to get a handle on this stuff.
Get early.
Yeah. Especially if you're somebody who's goal-oriented. Just because the goal ends up supplanting most of the work you would do as a person. So people just end up chasing the goal. They end up chasing the goal, chasing the goal, chasing the goal. And it's when they succeed and then get the goal, that's when they almost feel like they're adrift. Because it's like, I've been chasing this thing so long, and now that I have it, I don't know what to do with myself.
Yeah, it's the whole concept of toxic success. You know, it's like if success is the core function, you know, if it's how you're raised, you know, to believe that everything is an achievable goal and those are the milestones of your life, and you just keep setting, you know, bigger and bigger goals. The problem is you start really becoming a well-oiled machine, and instead of it taking 20 years to accomplish that goal, it takes you 10.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, now what? You spent your whole life chasing something that you thought you wouldn't have for a decade from now. And now that you have it, and usually it's the pinnacle. Like what now? Like how you've never learned a skill set on how to pivot because you don't know yourself.
Yes.
You know this being that went this far and had this as a goal. It's a very linear development. And now that you've accomplished it, you have no clue how to go chase something else.
Yeah. Well, and I think people think that, accomplishing a goal that somehow you'll get to keep carrying that forward, like that success you somehow get to rely on it. And it's like, no, once that project's done, someone gives you another. So any good work you did on any of that stuff, cool, you did it, but it's in the past. You don't get to keep that. But the personal work you do on yourself, that you get to keep and carry with you from assignment, project to project, thing to thing. So it's like if all you're doing is working on the goals, it's like almost investing a bunch of time into leveling up a character in this video game and then going, okay, I don't play that anymore. I play another game and I got to start from scratch. Like, no. You need to work on the thing that carries over time over time. So that's you. That's you as a person. Because you're the only thing that's the constant every time. You get assigned to an assignment, the constant is you.
Well, and that's your value. That's why you're the one that they are going to have the assignment happen. Yes. It's like that's why you're valuable. So if you only develop to a certain point, then you're going to become obsolete pretty quickly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Come to Yourself provides unbiased, easily accessible information from the top scholars in the fields of transpersonal psychology and consciousness studies, coupled with personal insights from successful artists, musicians, and business professionals to anyone looking to start their spiritual journey to discover and serve their soul's mission in life. Thank you for listening.